My name is Shaitan Kuti. I'm one of the community.
Ik ben Nederlands, ik hoor Afrikaans. Goedemorgen. Goedemorgen. Jimelang. Mijn naam is John Gunder, ik ben van de Northern Cape en mijn member van de psychology.
Goedemorgen, mijn naam is Jack Becker. Mijn member is coming from the Eastern Cape en mijn member van de
Good morning, everybody. My name is Sonia Boschoff. I am from Mpumalanga and also a member of the psychology. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Louis Mande from the City of Toys, KZN.
City of Toys.
Good morning. I'm Tunga Matia, a member of this committee from the Lazo City in the world. That's called Swat.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Veronica Mafogo. I'm from the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Good morning, I am Vinicas Manila from the Department of Cooperative Governance. And while I also need to say that probably Mr. Mtoto's duty may also be coming. He was supposed to be coming, so he may be running late. Thanks.
Good morning, I'm Henrik Mekwa from the Department of Justice and the State Law Rights.
Good morning, I'm Raksha Kasson. I'm from Parliament Legal Services.
Thank you very much. Welcome from the City of Trade and the third small city trust. I'm from a very, very, very small town in the country called Zale. Smallest town of the country, but a very big one. So not. Thank you. I'll thank for the department.
Okay, Chairperson, you also guide us, but what we thought we may need to do, there is a 3-4-page document, but we try to do that with that document was for, we look at the, what we regard as critical provisions of the bill as it was submitted to the National Assembly. Then looked at the changes which were affected by the portfolio committee on COPSA. And those are the kind of provisions we'll be taking to you. The rest of them, they are primarily technical and drafting things, the things got drafted in a particular way, but the ones which will be taking, you throw about 7 of them, those are the ones which we think substantively the committee ought to be aware about because some of the policy posture could change to them. And with that in mind, I will ask my colleague Veronica to quickly take us through that particular document. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. As you said, we can take you through the critical areas that were amended by the Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. These amendments came about as a result of the engagement that we had through the public submissions process. So based on public submissions and discussions within the committee, these were the provisions of the bill, which are of a substantive nature, which were amended. The first one relates to the inclusion of game farming in the definition of agricultural property. The bill, when it reached the portfolio committee, it included game farming in the definition of agricultural property. You'll recall when we first briefed you, we went through those things. Having gone through the public comments process and having heard the submissions, and I think the committee itself, the portfolio committee, also had quite extensive engagement on this particular issue, And in the end, the committee felt that it was inappropriate, frankly, that the definition of agricultural property include game farming. So that provision to include game farming in the definition of agricultural property was withdrawn. So the current bill does not have game farming included in the definition of agricultural property. The main reason for this, in terms of the discussion with the portfolio committee, is that the activity of game farming does not substantially contribute to what is called food security in the country, and therefore it was felt that it cannot be classified under that agricultural definition. There were engagements about the fact that game can be eaten to a certain extent, but it was felt that that part of game that constitutes food or food production is regarded as a luxury food. It's eaten by very few people in the country, and it's eaten not because people are hungry. People just eat game because they want to experience the feeling of having a game. And they do it mainly because they've gone hunting and they feel they must eat what they've hunted. There was also the view that the inclusion of game farming in the definition of agricultural property may incentivize conventional farmers to convert their land to game farming. There was some anecdotal evidence that this was happening to a certain extent in certain areas. It was thought that if it was included in the definition of agricultural property, game farming would obviously automatically enjoy the same differential treatment as game farming. And that, by the way, is a 75% rebate. Just to give you a sense, currently, in terms of regulations that have been issued by the minister, agricultural property is subject to a 75% upfront rebate, so they would have enjoyed that. They felt that this was not appropriate for the reasons that I've given just now. So the second issue that was revised in the committee dealt with Section 8. Section 8 was around the issue of proposing a different property categorization framework, which the department proposed in the original bill, and to provide for specific strict property categories with some leeway for municipalities to devise their own property categories. It was revised based on submissions from members of the public and municipalities mainly. Municipalities' submissions were to the effect that they felt that they were a little bit too hands-on, and the committee, in committee it was felt that this should be amended. The revision that was included is that let's allow municipalities to include further property categories or sub-categorize the property categories that we have proposed in Section 8. They should be allowed to sub-categorize the property categories that are in Section 8, but they must only do so if there's good cause for them to do so. Because remember, it is felt that Section 8 needed to be the way that it is to allow for transparency in the property categorization framework. Currently, there's no transparency in that framework. And to allow for better monitoring and better oversight, and to also allow property owners to know and understand what property category their property actually falls into. It is our view that in terms of the current framework as it is in the Act, there is not enough transparency, and this will allow for that transparency. So it was thought that if municipalities want to sub-categorize further the property categories that we propose, but they may do so if they can show good cause, and they can apply to the minister to do that, and the minister will consider their application and they will be allowed to do so. So this gives them that specific leeway, and that's the amendment that was added. What is written below that in italics is the actual clause as we have added it. Basically the clause says that where a municipality can, on good cause, show that there is a need to subcategorize the property categories listed in subsection 2, a municipality must apply to the minister in writing for authorization to create one or more such subcategories. He says such application must be accompanied by a motivation for such subcategorization, so it must be motivated, meaning it cannot just be subject. The municipality must demonstrate that such subcategorization is not in contravention of Section 19. There are provisions in Section 19 that don't allow for unfair discrimination between property categories, and it must reach the minister at least 15 months before the start of the municipal financial year in which the municipality envisages levying a rate on that subcategory of property. mainly 15 months so that the minister can have enough time to consider it and give a response in time for the municipality to be able to implement that subcategory in the financial year within which they would like to implement it. What we've also done, because this is quite a big transition, it's quite an important policy for the reasons that I've given, for transparency and for ease of oversight by ourselves and by Parliament, by the way. We have provided a transitional arrangement, meaning that municipalities are given time within which to phase these provisions in. So it's not going to be a big bang approach where they have to do it immediately the following year after this act is enacted. So we have provided that the provision of this section, being Section 8, should be implemented by municipalities within 7 years of the effective date of this act. So it gives them 7 years within which to make that specific transition. So it doesn't destabilize them at all. The third issue that was amended in the committee related to amendments that were proposed to Section 16, which provided, by the way, Section 16 provides for the minister to protect sectors of the economy if municipalities subject them to excessive rating. Initially, there were amendments that purported to provide for a time frame within which sectors of the economy should make submissions to the minister in terms of Section 16, by when they should submit any evidence to the effect that they think that they are being overrated and that their business is being killed. We withdrew these, and they were replaced with amendments to provide for a notice by the minister limiting the cents in the rand rate that is to be levied on any specific category of properties in terms of Section 16, such that that notice determines the date from which the rate that the minister decides on becomes effective. What happens is that when sectors of the economy submit applications, they'll be saying, look, we are being rated at rate X, and our view is that this rate is too high for us, it's killing our business. They will show us exactly what the effect is on their business and their sector, by the way. And if the minister is convinced by their submission, the minister can take a decision to limit the rate that the municipality levies on those categories of properties that the sectors of the economy made a submission about. Now, all that this is saying, this revision that was done in committee, is that when the minister issues the notice in which he says municipality X and municipality Y, let's say, you must charge up to rate X for this property category, the minister must give an effective date in the notice from which that rate that the minister actually imposes on the municipality should be implemented. The reason we're doing this is because there was a feeling that perhaps the act, the way that it is drafted, can allow scope, or it can allow for an expectation from sectors that the rate that the minister actually imposes on municipalities should be retrospective. Because the rate that the sectors would have been applying to the minister in terms of would have been literally implemented in the last 2 years, let's say. So sectors wouldn't necessarily expect to be repaid the rate above which they were rated. So in general, we wouldn't want any legislation to have retrospective effect, and that this provision here makes it clear that any rate that is imposed by the minister will not be retrospective. So that is the amendment that was made. The reason that we withdrew the original amendment is that it was felt that it wasn't required as long as it was shared in the notice from when the rate becomes effective, and that rate will be the effective date will be a future date, by the way. So you can see in terms of Section 16.2b, the amendment reads as is given there in the italics. It says that the municipality affected by a notice referred to in paragraph A, that's the notice that I was just referring to now, must give effect to the notice. What in brackets is being deleted, that's already in the Act. And then what we're adding is the effective date of which must be from the date determined by the minister in the notice. So it's making it clear that that date must be determined. The fourth issue that was amended in committee relates to issues around places of public worship and the official residences that are related to those places of public worship. It was agreed in committee that the relevant section 17.1(i) which relates to these places of public worship, should the amendment make it clear that only one office bearer's official residence registered in the name of the relevant religious community is excluded from municipal rating? Currently, the Act actually allows for places of public worship to be excluded from rating. I just want to put that forward. It allows for it. Places of public worship may not be rated. The Act also allows for the official residence of the person who officiates at those places of public worship to be excluded from rating as well. However, the Act is not clear in terms of how many official residences may be excluded from rating. What we know and understand and what we've seen in practice is that officials of places of public worship usually approach municipalities requesting that numerous properties be excluded from rating, numerous residential properties, by the way. So they will have many persons who they feel are linked to those places of public worship who live in various houses, some of them owned by the places of public worship, which can be shown that they do, some not, and a number of them do pressurize municipalities to exclude those residential properties from rating. In certain municipalities, such as rural municipalities that have found evidence to this effect, this can be quite crippling to a municipality because there are too many residential properties that will in the end be excluded from rating. So municipalities don't have a leg on currently to stand in terms of saying no, only one place of public worship, only one residence should be excluded, and one residence belonging to the primary person who officiated services at the place of public worship. So it was felt in a committee that this needed to be made clear, that what the Act is referring to as far as places of public worship are concerned and the residences that are attached to those places of public worship, as far as the Act is concerned, it is referring to one residential property in which the primary person, meaning the primary person, one person, who is the primary person, who is officiating at the place of public worship, will be excluded from race. So that is all that these provisions are doing, making that clear, so that it's not multiple properties that have to be excluded, which has a negative financial impact, it is felt, on municipalities. So as you see in italics, that is the amendment that is being made. You can see that the is added there in terms of the official residence, just to make it clear that we're talking about one official residence. And the is put there in place of an when reference is made to the office bearer, to make clear that what is meant in the Act is the one official office bearer who officiates, who is a primary officiator. If we understand that there may be many others, however, this exclusion, as far as the Act is concerned, is related to one specific office bearer. Item 5, or the fifth issue that was amended in the committee, relates to the amendments that were proposed to Section 32 of the Act. Section 32, if you recall, was proposing to extend the period of validity of the valuation rule of municipalities to 5 years, all municipalities. So it was proposing to say, currently the period of validity of the valuation rule is 4 years. So based on a number of considerations, there was a proposal that it be 5 years, and to allow for the MEC to extend that period of validity by an additional 2 years upon application by a municipality, or if there was a an intervention going on in that municipality in terms of Section 139. Now, having made that proposal, following public submissions to the effect that it was not appropriate to extend the period of validity of a valuation rule, it was felt that we need to recognize certain things, and that certain things need to be withdrawn, specifically to take the issues raised in public submissions into account. What the committee agreed to and to revise was that we should retain the period of validity of the valuation rule to 4 years for metropolitan municipalities. So the status quo remains for metropolitan municipalities. Their valuation rule will remain valid for 4 years. The reason being that it is felt that the property market in metropolitan areas and also certain larger cities is very active, and to allow a longer valuation roll period would disadvantage property owners, because in between the property market will have been moving and property values would have been changed, would change as a result of that. Hence, it was felt that it is best to retain the period of validity to 4 years for metropolitan municipalities because it is appropriate. For municipalities outside metropolitan areas, it was proposed that we retain a proposal to extend the period of validity to 5 years, largely because in most rural municipalities, the property market is not that active. In any case, property values don't change that much, and to extend it would be reasonable, taking into account the fact that a large number of rural municipalities expend quite a lot of financial resources in firstly preparing valuation rolls. They spend a lot of money to do that because they don't have valuation capacity in-house. So they haven't spent that money. They're not able to recover what they spent on the valuation roll through the collection of rates over a four-year period. So at the end of the day, they don't break even. It's just it's basically a bonus issue where when you spend money, you must break even at the end of the day. You must recover what you spend or do better, meaning collect more. So they don't necessarily break even over 4 years. So they will, it is thought that they will probably be able to break even over a longer period, being 5 years. So it is thought that for those municipalities outside the metro, they should have an option to have a longer period of validity for their valuation role. Hence that specific revision. By the way, the fact that the period of validity of the valuation rule for metros is up to 4 years, nothing stops any metro, which has the resources to do so, from having a shorter valuation rule period. There are a number of municipalities that have shorter one. Cape Town is one. There are municipalities in Gauteng which have a very short valuation rule period. There's one in Gauteng which does a new valuation rule every year. So nothing stops a municipality from having a shorter valuation rule, a metro or even a category B municipality. So these municipalities that have a five-year period, if they have the resources and they can pay their valuation rule within a lesser period, they're able to do that. Coupled with those revisions, the other issue that was also revised in terms of those proposals, as you know, in the Act currently, the MEC can extend the period of validity of a valuation rule where there are exceptional circumstances. Those circumstances are, one, if there is a section 139 in the municipality, and two, if a municipality requests an extension, but only for exceptional, under exceptional circumstances. In terms of the extension, the valuation rule, the revisions that were made to the original proposal were that for, in the case of a metropolitan municipality, In the case of a provincial intervention, for example, if there is a provincial intervention, the validity of valuation rule may be extended from 4 years to 6 years in the case of a metropolitan municipality. And in the case of a local municipality, that valuation rule can be extended from 5 years to 7 years. In the case where a municipality submit an application to the NEC under exceptional circumstances to extend the valuation rule, the revision that was made was that the validity of the valuation rule can be extended by an additional year in that specific case. The item 6 speaks to amendments to include what is called a professional associated valuer without restrictions with 10 years of experience as a member of the Valuation Appeal Board. That was the proposal that was made in the bill. The reason for this is basically because of the shortage of professional valuers in the country, and it was, and because of the shortage of professional valuers in the country, there were difficulties for quite an extensive number of provinces to set up valuation appeal boards because they couldn't attract professional values to those. So the proposal will need to include a professional associated valuer in that regard. What happened in the committee was that that provision was revised slightly. It wasn't revised extensively. The proposal to include a professional associated valuer remains in the bill. However, what was changed was that the primary consideration should be to attract a professional valuer because, by the way, between the qualifications of a professional valuer and professional associated valuer, they differ somewhat. Hence, the primary objective should be to attract a professional valuer to the valuation appeal board. However, if for whatever reason one cannot be attracted to that specific valuation appeal board, a professional associated valuer without, not just any professional associated valuer, one without restrictions, meaning that person can value any, is allowed to value any property, any category of property, and who has at least 10 years experience, may be appointed. So it allows for the professional associated valuer to be appointed, but only if it is proved that a professional valuer cannot actually be appointed to the valuation appeal board. Lastly, there were amendments in the bill which related to the exclusion of certain public service infrastructure from rating. Those were roads, railways, airport aprons, runways, dams, and breakwaters. Those were proposed in the bill to be excluded from rating. That amendment was retained. However, based on submissions from stakeholders, specifically municipalities that requested this, was that municipalities needed a lot of time over which to phase out the rating of public service infrastructure. Remember, municipalities are allowed to rate public service infrastructure currently, and some of them, 71 of them, out of the 200 and something of municipalities, are rating a certain public service infrastructure. Initially in the bill, they were being given 3 financial years to phase out the rating of the public service infrastructure that is being proposed here. Given the submission that the municipalities made in committee, it was felt that the proposals of municipalities were accepted and that the phasing out period be extended from 3 years to 5 years. So they may rate them until the 5 year period actually ends and the rating gets reduced every financial year. Chairperson, those are the main revisions that were made to the bill in the committee. All the other revisions were technical in nature, and I think it's the view that these should not necessarily be discussed with you here because of their technicality. Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know if my two colleagues want to add anything.
No,
just
one
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for explaining us. The last time when I was with the department, I had to leave the meeting halfway, and some of my questions I didn't know the answer it, but it's fine. My concerns of this came from the HI. The explanation is a bit very vague for me, because how do you explain a game farm in Limpopo where a golden buffalo are sold for 500,000 rand and they sell each year 8 to 11 of those golden buffaloes to Russia, to Switzerland? How do you explain that concerning a tax-based issue for a game farm? Just make it clear on that. The other thing is, it's fine to say that it's actually a good thing for the, when it comes to public worship places, it's a good thing, but there's a question I've got for it. Why then, when the municipality sells land to a public worship for people to put up for the church, they charge them at market prices? They put the land on tender. The tender with the highest price can buy it, and I've got experience about it. I lost such a piece of land because I didn't have that money to tender further. In Abidjan municipality, I'm not talking about something that happened to someone else. That's my question. And I asked them there, they couldn't give me land up until today. I have lost that piece of land. There's another piece of land that's going out of tender again. That's my question, sir. And then I hope they can give me a satisfactory answer. And the other question that I had the last time, and it's including in this, it was included in this bill. I just want to find out, isn't there anything that the department can assist the local community when it comes to, especially our towns now, when it comes to renting prices for properties, residential properties? It is so high. A poor person, a man that even earns 20,000 and can't afford a decent house to hire in Uppington. Because of the solar farms that surround Uppington, people are hiring their houses out for 42,000 rand, 38,000 rand, 16,000 rand, small two-room house for 16,000 rand. Because, and the Spaniards and Italians, they pay that money because they pay in euros. And the people of Uppington who try to get houses, they can't get houses because of these things. And the municipality hasn't control over it. Is there any energy department can assist us or help us with this? Because I was in to hire a house out to 60,000 rand.
No, thank you, Chef. I'm happy that the, in terms of the last briefing, questions that you raised, now the department has come to its senses in dealing with the game farming. Because you indicated that game farming is a luxury situation. But I'm happy now that they're looking at it and they're dealing with that particular situation. But the second point, sir, one of the biggest industries that we have in this particular country is the churches. They're making millions and billions of money. Why do you want to exclude them? Why do you want to exclude them? If you look at all the churches, No, I agree that it's non-profit, but they're making millions and billions. Look at the pastors, what is it that they're driving? The suits, the wind. Look at that situation. Then you want to punish the poor people there that are not, who must contribute towards those particular churches.
Okay, that's
right. And that is really, that is what we see, that is what we live with. So what do you do to punish the poor, no? And make sure that the rich become rich? That's what you're doing in terms of this particular bill. Why do you do that? I mean, you just go to, what is this? Just look, Johannesburg, Rema Church. Just look there. Look at that pastor when he walks on television. The gold he's wearing on his hands. Just look at that particular situation. And then you want to go and punish the poor people you want to charge them in terms of peace and whatever, but want to exclude those ones that are very rich. What is this? I understand the church. But it was in exclude their properties where they live in.
and look at the luxury houses that they live in. But it might be third stories, double stories, five cars, you know, everything else that those poor people don't have. What message are you sending to those communities outside there? That as this government, we want to protect the rich and punish the poor. See, that the message that you send out there. Because in real terms, these are not even public worship places. They're business people. These people are in business. Look at the Nigerians when they go in here. The Southern Americans when they go in to South Africa to build these particular churches. They, what do you call these Indian churches? What do you call them? The mosques. Just go there. But just go there and look at the gold that is in that, inside that church, inside that mosque. That's the gold only, and set the cost around it. Now, you want to exclude them and punish the poor. Why? That's the point I'm trying to ask. Are you not here to protect the poor and punish the rich to make sure that you break even? Because municipalities will get poorer precisely because you are protecting, and that's what you did with the game farming in the beginning. Because we indicated that particular situation. What is the purpose? Just answer that question.
Firstly, I'd like to congratulate the presenter for the presentation. I think it was one of the best presentations we had in the 5 years I've been in Parliament. Very good that you understand your topic and you know what you're speaking and to be very good. Without you. I'm not against anything in this bill, but I'm worried about the whole lines. The whole lines between when is a farm not an agricultural farm, when is it a game farm, when is it a residential property, all these things, you go through it, all these points, every one of them you must draw a line. I'm worried about the drawing of that line if I look at the way our municipalities are operating. And if you are not open a door for big crime, big mistakes. That's all that worries me. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm not sure, Chair, I might have missed in the listening this issue of in the definition on the game farm. I thought that they are saying that it's excluded. So one would like to hear then the impact of that exclusion, because there's lodges, there's everything that in those farms. Is it covered then somehow? Because they can't be total exclusion, because even if they're not, the reason given is that if you can't classify it as food security entity or something. It doesn't sound a good reason to say no. That's one. So the impact, but I might have missed what they are saying exactly in terms of that consensus reached in as far as the exclusion in the definition. So as you say, she could be clarifying that one from the other one, Chair, that in the same light is the exclusion of the Air Force. Those are concerning areas. It's public service areas. I don't know what impact as well. So the question of impact of these exclusions, per se,
think it needs to be, it needs to be simplified, I think, so for our understanding in terms of all that. What kind of airports? There's broken airports. There's even the streets that are used for commercial purposes and all many other activities. And then the public worship places. Just a question. If I don't check because we are not privy to the information of the stakeholders or whether the portfolio committee has public hearings on the matter, one would be interested to know what was the response of the Catholic Church, for instance, with its missions. And many other similar churches who have quite big, with schools inside there, with hospitals that are commercial, with, you take that mission in Kranskop, for instance, from where it comes from, Sizabantu, it's almost a village, you create a village with a mission, What was the response? One would be interested to, if the parliamentary advisor here was part of the portfolio committee process, that he could share with us, just to assist us to clear minds in some of these areas. I think.
No, thank you,
Chair.
Honorable Louis asked that last question that I really want to ask, but I would just like to say, so Veronica, thank you once again. You really understand this stuff. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We can respond. We can explanation, whatever.
We'll try to respond to the issue, some of the questions, because they are a build up of each other. We will just cluster the issues into one. Well, some of them probably, if we are not coming here, it might be because the manner in which they were raised, probably we couldn't understand them well. But if I were to deal with the simple ones around the issues of the renting of property, where the issue of assistance regarding renting and all those related things. So that is the portfolio which falls under human settlement. So it's not part of the deal. So that is why the portfolio committee and the select committee which deals with issues relating to human settlement or to deal for those delineations. So we restrict ourselves to things which fall as part of issues of renting and all those legislation relating to issues of renting. They get governed through the legislations and policies which are done by the human settlement and the relevant committee in parliament.
Could you remember the question? Human settlements don't deal with race, he says.
He says renting.
Oh, not race, they don't keep
it. No, I was dealing with the issue of renting. Yeah. Now, the other issues regarding to the issues of properties owned by religious communities, to which there are a number of questions. Probably before we respond to that, we need to speak something upfront regarding the approach to the amendment bill. When we came with the municipal property rights amendment bill, there were certain decisions which we took upfront. And one of those is that we took the fundamentals of the Municipal Property Rights Act as enacted in 2004 as being found, short of those particular areas where our monitoring of the implementation of the Act and the support as we interface with municipalities and provinces, we saw that there were certain problems which were coming or things were not more challenging. those are the areas which we dealt with. So we didn't take the act and start going for each section and started doing the act as it is. And the reason we are doing that is when we come to the issues of the exclusions of the properties which are used by religious communities for the purposes of public worship, that is what the act itself, the original act, is pronouncing upon. So it's not the bill which is interfering with those things. And some of the issues which honorable members are raising, even the classical example of the when the pastor of the Rema Bible Church put up his residential property for sale, I think it was around 2003 or 2004, which attracted almost close to 10 million. At that particular stage when Parliament both the National Assembly and the NCOC dealt with the bill, all that information, they had, it happened at that particular issue. So when they made the decision, they were aware of some of those particular issues, because if you take the religious communities, they are different. So there are those which one can say that they are rich, so there are those which are poor, there are some of those who even congregate under trees, which don't even have places. So you have, it's not a, if you have those kind of differences. But then again, one of the issues which start coming up here is, as the honorable members are raising, that if you start talking, for example, about those religious communities which are regarded as being rich, it comes to the issues about the money which those religious organizations do have, whether it's by way of tithe or through with offerings or whatever they do. Now, there is a distinction between what the Income Tax Act, as administered by the National Treasury and the Minister of Finance, and those relevant committees of Parliament that the NCOP and National Assembly deal with, this is what we ourselves will deal with as mandated through the Municipal Property Rights Act. We are not, in terms of the Municipal Property Rights Act, dealing with the issues of revenues which those churches are getting, either generating themselves or collecting or donating. So those are the things which fall under the domain of the Income Tax Act, which the Minister of Finance deals with. The mere fact that those churches may not be paying taxes is a decision which comes from the, because of the revenues which the Minister of Finance and the Income Tax, including SARS and the National Treasury, ought to deal with in terms of those. So I'm just making this elimination of issues, that all that we are dealing with here is the issues of those properties which are used. And as I said, that is what Parliament of that state took a particular decision, which is not the issue where we were looking as to whether they are reasons were sound or not, but for us, in terms of the implementation of the Act, there were no issues which were coming, including from municipalities. For example, as we engaged with both municipalities and the SALGA and provinces, none of them raise those particular issues that they needed to be reviewed. But also, I understand where the honorable members come from, because if you look at the issues of the churches, although if you look at the United States as we are speaking, that is one of the hot debates. Exactly the point you are raising. We know what is happening in the United States, and the way they are tackling that, they are not tackling the issue which honorable members are dealing with. Some of the issue of property rights, which they also have in the U.S. They are trying to tackle those from the income tax provision through the internal revenue service which the United States is having. So all those things is not something which is unique to South Africa. The U.S. has got a lot of those things, and some of the Congress people, members of the U.S. Congress, including on the Senate, are starting to say that probably the time has come for their government to overhaul the income tax regime in order to see how they deal with the thing broadly. So it's a party. But also one of the members in the portfolio committee raised this issue, and when we indicated to him the deviations as we are trying to do, when at the later stage he told us that he has already written to the Minister of Finance regarding this issue, precisely what the honorable members are talking about. And also he has written, for example, to the Minister of Police or Safety and Security to deal with the issue of money laundering, and some of the people are alleging those things are being done through the churches. Because if anything has to be done, it will have to be between the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Police, if you talk about money laundering, although these things may interface between the two portfolios. So those are some of the things in order to respond to this particular issue body. Now, related to this is the issue of the poor in general. Municipalities themselves, through their ranking colleagues, deals with the issue of whether they exempt the poor from rating or they give them certain relief measures. If you look at the principal act itself, it tried to incentivize municipalities by coming with what we call a subvention, which was put at a minimum of 15,000 baht. The reason was for municipalities when they deal with the things in the communities to take those things into account. For example, if you take the city of Joburg, it took a principal decision which probably, as we are speaking, it may be revising it as part of its public participation processes on the issues impacting on the budget, that for properties, residential properties within the city of Johannesburg, which are less than 160,000 in terms of market value, they are excluded from rating. So that is, those things are what the municipalities themselves do. But it is not always possible at the next level to come with a uniform approach on a whole range of things, because there are certain things which are unique to certain jurisdictions, taking into account what is happening in those particular areas. So broadly, that is the issue around the issue of churches. But linked to that also, we also start touching on the issues that have been raised on the issues of funds. So there is a concept in the Act itself. I think it's section 9, which deals with what we call properties that are used for multiple use properties. And the reason that particular section of the Act is there is to recognize that if you go to certain particular properties, you, as valuers who are trained to deal with these particular issues, go and look at them. They will get there and find that this is a rich property. You may have certain properties within the very same property used for different things. And the Act, through that particular section, which we are not making any amendments to, it allows municipalities and valuers to apportion those parts of those particular properties into, for example, this is agricultural, and maybe the rates which are applicable to agricultural properties is residential. So all these manifestations which we have, there is a particular section of the Act which allows, it comes back to the issue, for example, which was raised. For example, if you go to a farming area, you may find that there is a place which is used for arable lands, for raising crops. You may find that something is used for the raising of livestock. You may find that part of the very same property is used, for example, for beneficiation of turning the very same produce into something by way of value adding. And that aspect, you may find that it falls under business or industrial. So all those classifications can be done with respect to that. Now, the issue of game farming, to clear it, in terms of the Act itself, because what has happened with what the portfolio committee, reversed is the decision to take game farming into the definition of agricultural property, because of the Act itself as it stands, that is the current status quo. Game farming is not part of agricultural property. So it dealt with separately. So we wanted to bring it into the agricultural property. So what they have done is to retain the status quo, and as we say, it took into account the public submission as well as the deliberations which happened in the committee when that decision was made. But however, having said that, what I can read that particular definition, which will make things clear as to how it stands, it reads as follows. Agricultural property means property that is used primarily for agricultural purposes. But without derogating from section 9, section 9 is the section which I allow for this mixed-use property, which also happens in farming areas, but not necessarily farming only. So to read it again, it says agricultural property means property that is used primarily for agricultural purposes, but without derogating from section 9, exclude any portion thereof that is used commercially for the hospitality of and exclude the use of property for the purpose of tourism or for the trading or hunting of game. So all these other aspects, like the roses and all those things, if they are part of the commercial aspects of product category, because we hate that as such, it doesn't mean that the things are taken out of the region, as they are not. It's only that they will have to fall into that property category where it is. So that is what this definition, and given how the gene stands at the moment, it tries to do. Now coming to the issue of airports and all this public service infrastructure which are being excluded from rating, there are two issues to that. If, for example, you take the issue of the airport, if you get into the Cape Town International Airport, you have this massive structure which is there, which has got a host of things there, restaurant and everything which is happening there. That is not part of what is being excluded from rating. All what is being excluded from rating is you take the Cape Town International Airport or any airport, is two aspects. Is where the planes, you find them standing, sort of your taking things you have across. And also those streets you call runways, which the planes use for landing and takeoff. Those are the things which are taken. The rest of that massive building, which is commercial, is still subject to rating by municipalities if they do. So those are the two things. The same thing if you take, for example, those infrastructure which are linking to water, for example, which are excluded. If you take all those things which the relevant department or the relevant utility is having the groundwater, all those other things will remain being rated if you finally want to do that. But what you are talking about is only those infrastructure related to them, which is used for the purposes which it is used. And by way of the issue of impact, which is one of the questions which were raised, that is what the colleague Veronica in her presentation stated orally, but if you look at the bill, at the back of the last page it is there, which talks about financial implications for municipalities. So all what she was talking about is already there as part of the memorandum of object of the bill, in terms of if you take all those things which we say they need to be excluded from rating, what it amounted to. But what the memorandum of object of the bill doesn't bring to the fore. It was the issue that we got a variety of conditional grants.
If you could answer the question in non-rated presentation, I think.
Oh, okay. No, it's fine. It's quite well taken. So, but that is that. It's just that. Now, I think there are only two questions which I couldn't get one which I mean. The issue is related to this issue of market prices. When properties, I was not so sure whether that particular question was raised in the context of religious communities or not. I'm not so sure if Veronica, you put it right, but I couldn't get it quite here. The issues of the buffalo and all those things, those are typical issues when the valuers who actually got the legislation to tell them how they do their business and how they get accredited, which is under the department, the Ministry and Department of Public Works. They take into account, but those are the technical things. The same thing of talking about accountants, opposite that house, do they go about their business? So they are all those things which apply to the professions which are taken into account. I'm not so sure on the last one, whether you got it clear or not. The thing of that is changing, I couldn't get it.
The way I understood the question was that it was a concern about, and the member can correct me if I'm wrong, it was a concern about when land is being made available for development, I think, and that it is expensive to go through that specific process to actually acquire that land to develop whatever you want to develop, including churches. On that issue, this bill and this act unfortunately doesn't deal with development, land development and so forth. Those are dealt with in other pieces of legislation. So although it is, I think it's a worthwhile concern, it cannot be dealt with in terms of this bill and this act. The last thing that I want to deal with is the question asked about places of public worship and living in the public hearings. we received any submissions from these churches. I think the members spoke specifically about whether they got anything from the Catholic Church. The response to that is there were no submissions from any stakeholders from that specific sector. And I think the main reason is that we were not changing anything fundamentally as far as the provisions relating to place of public worship are concerned. You mentioned that the Act as it is already excludes places of public worship from writing, and it excludes the residences, the primary residences of persons who officiate there. All that we were doing was clarifying things. So there were no fundamental change that was being made there. I would venture to say that is why you didn't get any submissions from those parties. Chair, I think I've dealt with everything. We've dealt with all difficult questions, which I'm grateful for.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gunner.
Chair, coming to back to this is a follow-up question on this. Public worship places. I still ask the questions, and that question was not answered. If you exclude the public worship places from taxing, why then do you sell land to them on market prices, market rated prices? And the difference, I think our concern here is not that you, and it says to make an example of Rema and Christ Embassy and two home runs, and it's sad to make an example of that. But the poverty of those people in that say that people are whistling doesn't cost 10 million rand. Rema is worth than 35 million right now. You go to Rema's house, you go to the schools of Rema. Rema's got private schools, not one school. That's our concern here. And the poor churches, the very poor churches, when they want to buy land, the municipality charges them market-rated prices. How do you put these two things together? How? This is our concern here. And the last thing, sir, another concern that I'm having with this church business. You check in apartheid. You check the charter from churches. How were they built? How big is the value of these churches? And not our people went. They come to a place to worship and they want land to build themselves a good place to worship. They can't afford it because they've been charged 105 rand per square meter. So those are the issues that I don't know if the department don't have an answer for us, if they must tell women we must go with that. We're those who lose people about that. Because it's not fair towards our people. And that's our concern.
Honorable members, if we could confine ourselves to our rateability and non-rateability, whether as a community we want places of worship to be rated or not. I think if we could deal with that and let's leave these issues of land development and the subdivisions of this and that and all sorts of things, maybe we will be able to take the meeting forward if we speak to that. If we are here to just comment, then we are here to with this amendment. If the amendment that we want to make, let's make them so that we move forward. Sure.
Sure. I still want to repeat. I understand that the Act as it stands now excludes places of worship. I agree. Is it what we want to do in this particular business? Because to me, we must call them places of worship. This business, the last thing saying that the members are trying to look at this particular matter too, can't be a survivor even before it gets worse than what it is today. Look at this particular matter, David. Because, I mean, the point we're putting forward is that those properties are too expensive. They make a lot of money. Now, we can't refer that to, because we're dealing with property rates. That's what this committee is dealing with. We're not dealing with income taxes, so I'm not worried about that. But I'm worried about the
development of the property.
Yeah, the development, yes. We have just been to Soweto now with the control, with the select committee on petitions. Community can't sleep. That church is too expensive. They make too much noise. Children can't even read. Nurses can't even sleep. You go into the church, just the music system there. It's so expensive.
So it's just on a point of order, Mr. Chair, dwelling off the topic. We are here on property rights, not about whether land is expensive or whether children can read or not. I think we should stick to what has been presented to us, and if we wish to take it further and have the land evaluated, then we should take it to the commission that deals with it.
Chair, I'm sticking to the point that I'm talking about the property rate. And that's the point I'm talking about. I'm just giving aside issues to that particular rate.
Let's deal with the process. If this committee, does this committee want places of worship to be rateable on the resident income tax development issue and process? Do we want the places of worship and its residents to be rated? I think that's the point that we need.
That's what we want. Is it
valuable rate?
So the question here is that
the question is, is that subject part of the introduced amendments to the bill? Because if it's not, I'm not too sure if we would be in the position to then go back and into the principal act. I think that class teacher must be given.
Thank you very much. I think that question will take us forward.
Thank you, Chairperson. The answer to that is no. The exclusion, I mean, the rating of places of public worship is not a subject of the amendment bill at all. As you said, the only things that are being clarified here are minor issues. So we're not in the scope of proposing that places of public worship and the residents be rated.
Thank you very much. Can we comment on that, please? And Robert, do you
know? I'm sure if the answer is no, let's leave it. Let's just proceed.
Section 17, which is dealing with impermissible rates, is part of the bill. However, the intention of Section 17, the section which amends paragraph I, which is to just single out that you referred into one office leader and one official residence, that is the intention of the amendment. But if you look at this in context, it would mean that even though that the intention is not to say that places of public worship should not be reiterated, that provision is here in the bill. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the bill also presents a definition for place of public worship in the definition section. So I know Rule 249 says that if you want to amend provisions, they must be part of it. But I can go and check up on this further if the committee wants to move that way.
Hello?
Then let's move forward. So,
the legal advisor just said to us now, in that night, I think she must go and check up, get it up for us, and we can take a decision as usual. Just we are there to support us. Thank you.
Okay.
Chair, I agree, and I want to second the question.
I think what I'm suggesting is the committee must look at whether the amendment or the amendment that has been suggested or the suggestion that has been placed before us, is it changing the bill substantially? Is it affecting this bill from proceeding? And would, are those technical or draftings? Because we have drafting preferences as doctors. So if you go through that section, would it have that bill? Would it affect the bill to proceed? Those are the things that I wanted to check to consider.
There's a point in this committee to decide. The bill is the committee. Now we have decided that let the legal people go and look at this particular issue and come back and brief us so that we can take a decision. Mm. We're not taking a decision as yet. I think I understand the lady that is open before my question. What she is trying to say to us is that the substantial nature of what we have to assess, the substantial nature of what we want to do, or our decision would affect inevitably. That's what she's trying to say to us, and that what is before us, what is part of the intention to amend. What is the intention of to amend? Is it not giving us that situation, that circumstance of achieving what was intended for these amendments? Mm. And the parliamentary advisor said the same thing, changed in a different way, that we would then have to engage into some assessment. And she means it's quoting Rule 249, and which might force us to then even prolong the deal and looking at the conference chair, looking at the temperance and the rising of the end, we might have the bill last, and I'm not sure if that's the intention of the committee. So I think those are quite matters, that significant matters that we need to look at. That's that we have this intended amendment that we brought. We can express as a committee that they're short and limiting, but do we have options there? If that's our view, that they're short and limiting. And we want it now. Because it's going to cost us a CJ. If we make a quick decision now to say we want the churches not places of worship not to be zero rated, or to be zero rated at what, it's substantial. We'll have to go public hearings. It's substantial. We'll have to go public hearings because it's in the principal bill. So I don't think that's we would be able to do it given the time that we have.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, it is up to the committee to take a decision on what to do, obviously bearing in mind what the member just before me said. I heard the legal advisor talking about the fact that there are further amendments that are related to the clarification types of amendments that we're making to Section 17, amendments relating to definitions. Yes, we do have definitions here which are related to places of public worship. However, those definitions do not touch on the rating, by the way, of places of public worship. They're just making it clear what places of public worship are and what official residences are within the framework of the current Act. If you look at the definitions, you'll see that the way that they're drafted, it actually refers back to Section 17 as it currently is in the Act. It takes most of the issues from there. So I'm saying that because I do believe that looking at whether places of public worship and the residents should be rated, it's a much bigger issue that, as the committee member said, would require much more time, which I don't think we have, and so forth. And also it would require public hearing, and it would be controversial, by the way. We should also be mindful of that.
Okay. Hey, just quickly, out of the questions we were asked was whether religious organizations, all of them, all things, have they inputted on the fee. The reason, as we said earlier, they gained in our view, is because in terms of whatever we are amending here, substantially, it doesn't change the status quo. And hence, they never saw a reason to even, when Parliament held public hearing. So basically, in our view, practically speaking, without looking at legalities, the fact is if a change has to be made, the policy decision has to be made. Well, it might be that the committee will have no way about having to engage with all those religious institutions, because the bill as it got introduced, it was not changing anything fundamental, and hence they were not interested. They looked at this minor amendment we were going to be clarity. But the other thing of whether we change the political path of the legislation is a new, is a big fundamental issue altogether. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Lester, for that view on the political finance. The committee will also generally deal with the amendments that we've got, whether or not to deal with the miracles, but then we'll be out. Because that is not the question. We'll take a decision and we'll continue with all the things. Because remember, we also have public hearing inputs for the committee. Mm. So it's not a matter that we must be thinking of another public hearing.
Mm.
We need to be working on the very same information that comes from the NA and came by decision. I think I need to close it at that level, that our legal advisors and our staff would have a little to fight clarity figure here, but another preservation.
Mm.
There has been that single issue on those issues that I emphasize. And also for us as members to understand that this bill may not necessarily absolutely be read out without touching other legislation like income issues or whatever, in terms of tariff, of course, not in terms of bills. And therefore, we need to have that aspect. So that when we take a decision, we are not creating another controversy. And this bill is long overdue. Those of us who are working on the municipality, we know what is to be done there.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be perfect, but it might take something better. Thank you for the meeting, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I understood you. That's it.